Okay, good afternoon. Welcome, everybody, for the final link session and the final session of TechIt. So it's good to see so many people have managed to stay awake throughout this morning and into the afternoon after the TechFest last night. This session is slightly different from what we've done with the previous sessions, where we've gone into a lot of detail around product and solution and those sorts of things. In the way we got, you know, lucky enough to have two customers that have sort of gone and going through the journey, if you like, in evolving towards Microsoft Link for their unified communications, ready to come and talk about their story and their journey. So we sort of broke it up in two halves. The first half, we're lucky enough to do Mike Zenfield and Jonathan Glenister. Okay, so Mike from Fonterra, Jonathan from HP, to talk about how they're rolling out unified communications with Link. And then in the second half of the session, we have Stuart Riley here from Lincoln University, down on the South Island. Made it up through the weather yesterday, battling up through the cancelled flights. And we'll cover off and go through there. What we'll do is we'll take questions for both customers, if you have them, all at the end, just so we can keep the flow and keep the timing, and then we can go from there. So without further ado, I'll pass you over to Jonathan and Mike, and we'll kick off. Thank you.
All set, and we'll get straight in. Yep, so we thought we'd keep it pretty straightforward and simple. We'll talk to you about how stuff came about. The science bit, just really around how Link is configured, and look at the roadmap from there. This is from the old deck, so apologies, the questions will come at the end, but those three core pieces as the main focus of the session. Am I? Oh, yes.
Cool. All right, so let's go on. Let's get on. Let me just put this back in my pocket. Great, so we're assuming you know us, but we thought we'd just give a few facts about both the companies. Mainly, I guess, it's about some of the themes that will be relevant as we go through, particularly with Fonterra around milk production. And as we talk later about how we've deployed, there's obviously the aspect around not interrupting the business flow and particularly that milk production I mentioned. So yes, as I said, Fonterra, largest cooperative, 140-year heritage, billions of litres of milk. I don't know if that's accurate now. I got that from the website, Mike.
I'll be reasonably accurate, yeah.
Yep. Interesting, again, from a Link perspective, the number of countries touched. But yep, a very big and complex organisation. HP, as you know, does a lot of work with a lot of companies in New Zealand and solutions, services, hardware and storage. And of course, networking. We work closely with Fonterra, both in a managed services perspective and also on project initiatives. Like to think that we have a centre of excellence in New Zealand, and believe we'll demonstrate some of that to you today. Cool, so let's just get a bit of a feel for what this thing looks like, yeah? So Fonterra, estimation about 10,000 users. Mike, 8,000 in Australia and New Zealand?
I mean, numbers are always a bit shaky on Fonterra, who exactly we're, but yeah, if we say about that 8,000-9,000 within the Australia-New Zealand region, and then, as you see on the site, there's lots scattered around the rest of the world.
Yep, quite tricky in terms of the number of locations. Something that's kind of hidden in there, which is worth explaining, is that basically they're not all your standard corporate sites. Obviously, factories and other manufacturing plants have to be treated differently, and some really interesting use cases that, if we get time, we'll have a talk about at the end. 60 PBXs and lots of desk phones. And there's some quite interesting learnings that I think we both found in terms of how the business was willing to accept a change to that kind of desk phone usage as the project progressed. So this bit, we're just going to kind of a question and answer session, so bear with me, really. All right, so what we thought we'd do is just talk to a timeline of activities. And so I guess, Mike, just to kick that off then, I'll bring some of the stuff up. So in terms of, you know, how things got going, do you want to talk a little bit?
I was going to say, I'll take over from here just to kick things off. So, I mean, back behind the scale, we actually ran LCS, which we won't talk about because it's way back in the past. But so we ran OCS 2007 globally across Fonterra purely for instant messaging and presence. Now that sat there and just kind of ran for a long time. And then around about, we're looking about early 2010 here, we were kind of getting to a point where our traditional telephony platform was getting a little bit long in the tooth. We're getting close to out of support for most of our equipment, if not out of support. And that kind of spurred us into action to look at what we're going to do next. So we had two choices there, which is, invest quite a large sum of money into our traditional PBX platform. And as you saw before, there's about 60 units across the world. That was quite a complex task, or at the time it was seen as something quite left field, and we'll just go to a pure IP-based system or a soft phone system, which was Office Communicator to Enterprise Voice at this point in time.
Should I bring up a little more of the slide? Then it makes it. So I guess a good point for me to ask you then. So that business case for voice, what was the main driver for that business case?
So our main driver was removing risk from the PBX, and there was a cost avoidance piece as well. So as I was saying, it's a reasonably expensive upgrade, actually a very expensive upgrade, to get us back into vendor support. And it was really just, we were kind of developing our whole unified comms area anyway, so that was like let's proceed down this path. We're sort of saying about this was all based on 2007.
Right.
And we were working through that business case, but it was actually Link got released partway through us doing the business case. And so, we looked at the services there and what they offered there, and actually made the decision partway through the business case to switch to Link instead of Office Communicator. Which was actually, for Fonterra, was reasonably aggressive. We probably were, only a few months after general availability on Link, looking at deploying that.
Yep. In terms of the kind of first major event, I guess it was the Link pilot, which we did with you. Yep. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the activities with the pilot?
Yep. So Link pilot was the... stand up a Link environment, and then migrate 100 users out of one of our corporate offices. It just happened to be an office that was recently built. When they built it, they didn't really put in much of a telephony system, so we had basically one phone per four people. So they were quite happy to get a telephony solution, full stop. And we spun up a full Link enterprise infrastructure, even just for these 100 people, with the idea that if the proof of concept was successful, then we could just expand that out and deliver that to the rest of Fonterra. That went very well, I think would be the simple answer to that. It was very well embraced. In fact, we're trying to do these things in a very structured manner to just, carefully manage how we roll it out. But at the same time, we've got people demanding it at us, which, from an IT department wasn't the most usual thing that we see. So we actually spent a good chunk of the project actually holding people back just so we can actually get our process in place and make sure that we'd deliver the solution in a controlled manner.
So just in terms of that pilot, I guess, and I'm doing it for the audience, I know, but in terms of other things we did, we obviously looked at training material and phones. Do you want to talk a bit about some of the work we did there? Or?
Yep. So... we spent a lot of time on training, and
he means
paid
himself
off.
By this, yeah. Obviously.
We got other people to do training. So we kind of did two things. So we've got a lot of self-service documentation. We've been, the large organisation we are and the decentralised organisation we are, it's very hard to get people on site to do training. So we did a lot of time on documentation and material and a self-service portal as such. Just so for those people who missed any classroom training, they can go in and train themselves and for new employees. But what we also did was for this pilot site, which was a corporate office in Auckland,
yep.
So we did classroom training for them, and this was in two phases. Phase one, which was just basically how to use Link, how to use Enterprise Voice, and then there was an advanced session for those people who wanted to, which was all about online meetings and conferencing.
And I guess one thing that we did additionally was we used the kind of Microsoft cheat sheets, which you can download from the website, and they were quite useful because they just covered a single action, so how to make a call, how to join a conference, and it wasn't a replacement, but I guess nice for those people when they moved to Link, the first thing they saw was some basic instructions to do what they'd done before, yeah?
Yeah, and we didn't actually really build anything from scratch. It was all, everything, all the training material came from the Microsoft material, and then we customised it to Fonterra's needs.
What about, you know, I mentioned in the question, it was a bit ago, but in terms of phones and headsets, we did some eval then, didn't we, around those?
Yeah, so it was one of the more interesting choices. We decided to not do any desk phones whatsoever, so headset only, and it was a prescriptive headset. You got one choice and one choice only. And, you know, we were kind of expecting a lot of kickback from that, and actually we got none. And we've got some comments later, and I think some of them are about, you know, was about that. And actually, most people have been very, very positive about only having headsets. And even with some you know, some of the funny comments, like, I've got space on my desk again. But, no, it's, I think, because there's so many choices out there for, you know, link desk phones, link headsets, and all the rest of it, I think it would have been very difficult for us if we just gave them a whole catalogue of options. So we just kind of said, here's your standard. If you've got any special needs, we're not saying no, we're saying that you can go off and we'll recommend some headsets and you can buy it yourself. And, you know, where we are today, I'm just kind of jumping ahead a bit, but, you know, we're about 2,500, well, probably more now, about 3,000 people on Enterprise Voice, and we'd still be 99% headsets only.
Yeah, well, I guess also during that pilot phase, we looked at, we did evaluate some phones from the perspective of conference rooms and reception areas. And it was kind of useful to make the most of the pilot, not just, I felt, in terms of the training and the back-end infrastructure building to deliver what you wanted, but also just to check those devices and make sure they fitted, albeit you mandated the headset usage.
That's right. And we are talking about for an end user. So as part of this, because one of our main objectives here was to remove the traditional PBX, so we actually had to come up with solutions for, you know, when it's not a user. So be it a meeting room, be it we have phone booth type rooms. So we had to come up with solutions for them, which we've gone basically straight with the Polycom CX series of link devices. And it wasn't part of our pilot project, it was a future phase. So as part of the pilot, we just did the users and then left the PBX and the meeting rooms on the old technology. And then in the project that came afterwards, then we took them out and basically removed the PBX completely out of that site.
Cool. Moving down the path on the slide, in terms of production rollout, do you want to talk, how do we, just try and remember now, how do we decide those initial sites?
It was actually...
it's a loaded question, by the way.
Yeah. Just try not to say anything inappropriate. We chose sites that will cause the least amount of issues for the project, so what we call friendly sites. And these were basically knowledge workers, so you know, people who primarily sat at a desk on a computer, no shift workers or anything like that. So it is our corporate offices, and that was two in Auckland, so Princess Street and Shortland Street, and our office in Hamilton.
So where do you work, Mike?
In the main office in Hamilton. The former head office.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that pilot, as you said, the actual production rollout went well. Took us a reasonable amount of time because it's quite a number of users. But do you want to elaborate just, you know, how successful? I know we've got a slide in it, but the feedback was generally good, or was it, you know, was it lumpy, or what's your thoughts?
No, it's been overwhelmingly positive. And as I said, it's always been a bit of a weird anomaly for an IT project where users want what we're throwing at them. So 95-98% positive feedback. Just some oddball scenarios where Link, you know, may have caused some issues for them, and that's generally when you get to things like the shift workers or one which I wasn't expecting is hearing impaired, so we had to kind of then re-look at our standard headset.
Right.
And see if that's suitable for a hearing impaired person. So, but no, it's been very positive. And you know, and where we are now, we're still actually holding people back. And this is, you know, it's almost gone like viral throughout Fonterra globally. You know, we've got people in, you know, all over the world who are sort of, you know, bugging us when they can get Enterprise Voice. And of course, at this point in time, we don't have Enterprise Voice services in many countries apart from Australia and New Zealand.
I guess we're going to talk more about the actual future state with the voice rollout later, but I guess something that's interesting for me is that, in a way, Fonterra's kind of leapt ahead with certain aspects, and one of them is around your global video projects. Do you want to talk a bit about how we've integrated Link and that video?
Yeah, so this started off as a standalone piece of work. So while we're doing the Link project, we've got another big internal initiative about reducing travel and improving collaboration. And we went down a telepresence project path. And so we're in the final throes of that project now. So this was, I don't know the numbers, I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but we've done about sort of like 6 full immersive telepresence rooms and about 20, I think, just kind of standard sort of high-definition video conference rooms. Now, the challenge we had is it's basically a completely different technology. So, and we didn't want to confuse our users with, if I go into this room, I have to do this, and if I go into this room and do this. So we've fully integrated the two solutions. We're working on fully integrating the two solutions. There's still a few areas that need work on. So now you can book a Link online meeting and go into a telepresence room and join it, or you can book a, it's all Polycom kit, so you can book a Polycom RMX meeting, bridge meeting, and all Link users can join that. And so we're getting to that point where it doesn't matter how you book a meeting or what tool you use to do it, then you can still seamlessly join.
Which I guess as a user experience has been great, yeah? Because people just, they knew how to use the Office Suite, Outlook, and they got used to the Link client from LCS and OCS, and so that was quite a seamless transition.
Yeah, I mean, the high-definition video conferencing, which as we call it, is still quite niche. I mean, there's not that many units out there in the greater scheme of things.
So people, that's room-to-room kind of stuff?
Well, it's room-to-room and room-to-multi-room, right. And also we do external, so B2B, B2C right. type connectivity. Apologies for the acronyms. But but people still use Link first. So most people would rather sit in front of their computer with their webcam to do a video conference or just any sort of conference than go into one of the meeting rooms. When we see the meeting rooms really come into their own is when it's either a very high-profile meeting. So most of our senior team will use telepresence for international conferences, or the workshop-type ones where you know people want to scribble on a whiteboard or you know have more of an open discussion without distracting all the people in their pod. We're all open-plan desks, by the way, so sometimes people get a bit passionate about being too emotional on a video call.
I'll just bring up this some kind of themes that come up. So yeah, as Mike said, I guess one of the key things was keeping up with demand and holding people back. We'll talk about it more in a moment, actually, but the understanding your use cases became really important, especially around the factories and how they, it's not always a person interacting with the telephone system. And as we'll see later, some discussions around analog, which we didn't see in the first phase. And then as Mike's very clearly articulated, the tight integration to the Link and Room system. It's not that funny a story because it's at my expense, but when we were doing the trial run of this, I had to run from HP to Shortland Street to get there in time, and the whole of Mike's team is in the room, yeah? And this is a tiny little room. They turned the heating up to, I felt like 100 degrees, yeah? And because they always use the technology, they had one of the, Mike Saint was on the screen behind, and Simon positioned in front of him, yeah? So that was quite an awkward meeting, because all he could see was our back.
He didn't have the best view of Jonathan in that one, but But, you know, it's so we're also running the Link video room as well, so it's the Polycom CX7000, which is one of the rooms we were in that day.
Yes.
So, and those rooms we've done quite a lot of. So in New Zealand alone, we've probably deployed over 100, or maybe not video rooms, but, you know, sort of, you know, about the 50 of those video rooms. But yeah, every site we go to, it is the meeting rooms are going Link technology.
And again, we'll talk about it, and we've got a kind of slide which talks about lessons learned. But that was one thing I guess we had to put together was around how different types of meeting rooms needed different kinds of equipment and what would fit really, both in terms of like the manageability and you know to the seating arrangement so everyone could be seen and so forth.
Yeah.
Cool. Shall I keep tracking? Okay. So. On this one, it's Mike. Sorry, so I'll be quiet.
We'll see. As you can see, me and Jonathan have worked together for a bit now, so...
he can insult me.
Expect more banter. So this one here is really, okay, so what have we learned from the project so far? As you can see, we've been working on this a long time. You know, Fonterra is a big, complex organisation. We're not going to implement a global Link solution in a couple of months. In fact, we've been working on it for about 3 years. And we've still got probably another 2 years worth of work to do to fully migrate the whole company. But, you know, it's very iterative, and so this section's, you know, really about what we've learned and what we'd do differently. The main point, so this first bullet point is kind of one of the key ones, is site surveys. And this is where we're actually trying to identify what people have got on site. Now, in the corporate offices, it wasn't so bad because, you know, they're generally knowledge workers. They have a phone on their desk and, you know, a few call rules, you know, some attendance and things like that. We're just hitting our industrial sites now. So we've done a couple of warehouses and we've just started doing the discovery on a factory site. And that's a very different game. There's things that we would have never imagined that you'd find on site. And even simple things like, you know, how many dial-up modems we have out on factory sites, how many auto dialers, how many fax machines, you know, all these services which don't natively sit in a product like Link, but because our goal is to remove the PABX, we have to address them. And so, yeah, really detailed discovery, to the point that we actually send a team of people to every site and basically interview every person on every site and say, how do you use your telephony? You know, what are the services you use? How do you operate? And they document that all out. And then that goes into a set of standard solutions we're developing, which gets amended as we go along. As we learn new things, we add new solutions into the standards. But, yeah, it's definitely getting that knowledge up front has made a big difference. This next one, because I will talk on too much. So this next one is actually one of these funny things. So, you know, we'd spent a lot of time making Link robust as possible, so, you know, so we had no risk around it. What we didn't plan on was the state of people's desktops. And so, you know, we go to deploy Link and, you know, give them a headset and all the rest of it, and be things like the USB port doesn't work on their computer, which made it quite hard to get the headset to work. And we actually found that, you know, we've got quite a long refresh of company computers, and, you know, some of them just wouldn't work. And so we actually had to spend quite a lot of time actually rebuilding people's computers, which completely unrelated to the Link project, but just because it wouldn't work until their computer would work.
So I guess we found some of the minimum specs just didn't meet. So, I mean, that's something we've seen, HP seen across a lot of customers, that it's not Link flies, yeah, but it's getting your basics right around, we don't touch on it here because you've got oodles of network bandwidth in most cases, but get your network right, get your standards right, do your training, and make sure your PCs meet the minimum standards, because that user experience is key. But I think Link for us was always good, and it was just that periphery we had to work on, yeah?
Yep. Yeah, I don't think we've actually had any major incidents on the back end of Link.
Paul, did you like that? Do you want to say it again?
You can pay me later, but the so pretty much most issues we've seen have actually been they have been computer related, either headsets, because you know when you buy several thousand headsets you get a few out of box failures, and you've stayed at a computer.
Do you want to talk a little bit? I've talked too much, but the return investment. Any one of those that stands out of those three?
Yeah. So, of course, I can't give you numbers on this, but let's just say Link has been a self-funding project. The audio conferencing primarily has, you know, and it's almost, you know, you see these textbooks examples of Link rollouts where they, you know, talk about the self-funding model, and audio conferencing is always the first one off the bat. And it's true. I mean, we saved so much money in the first month on audio conferencing that it basically paid for the rest of the project. Toll avoidance is, you know, it still makes us some savings there. We've got, like a lot of companies, we do internal recharging, so toll avoidance becomes a bit tricky when a different business unit incurs the cost of, you know, when doing toll bypass. So we're still working that one out. We've got the technology there, but we can't turn it on because we can't quite come to terms with who's going to pay for someone else's toll call. But and the last one, which we've only just started doing, so removing legacy kit, really this is the old ISDN lines and the old PBXs. So this is another big financial item for us. It's probably the last one we can do. Out of those 60 PBXs, we've removed about 3 so far. So, you know, that's our success when we know we've pulled out the old equipment, but that's the hardest bit to achieve.
Cool. So this is just, I think there's 4 of them. Yep, there's 4 of them. So these were just some of the comments we pulled. Mike gave me a list of some of the feedback that we got from users, and I think it speaks for itself, really. You know, some really good things. I like the one in the bottom left about sound quality to China. Yeah, this is all straight from users' mouth. Yep. So that was quite a cool one. I mean, as you said, I guess from a user's perspective, makes a change for them to be positive about IT.
Exactly. This was actually pulled from, this was one of our post-pilot surveys. Pilot was the first major project. So we sent out the survey to about 2,000 people, and we got a reasonably high response rate, so about 1,500 responses. So of course, we weren't going to post all the comments on there, but there was most people put in some free text feedback, and, you know, again, 95% was positive, and some were humorous as well. But, it's definitely been a positive experience. Us being such an international organisation these days, that this one, like to China and to our other markets, has been one of the, you know, a real common piece of feedback. And online meetings as well is actually the other one. Just the fact they can just book it themselves and away they go.
Well, I think you said to me that there's a lady you work with in Auckland, and
yeah. So one of our managers, it was I was just having an off the cuff conversation with her, and the comment was saying that Link is the best thing IT's done in the last 10 years. I'm not sure if that's saying some bad things about IT or some good things about Link, but we'll take it as good things about Link.
I actually meant, that's a great point. Yeah. Again, that's another one for us with beers, Paul. But I meant in terms of you said to me about the virtual meetings. You know, you said that the lady in, someone on your team is in Auckland and she tends to talk to you more.
Yeah, sorry, right. We'll get there. So
it's pulling teeth, guys.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually an interesting behavioural change because now booking meetings are so easy and that everything's just the touch of a button. The comment was is that me being based in Hamilton, and there's not many IT people left based in Hamilton, but one of the managers, her comment was that I now speak to you more often than anyone I do in my own office, because if I'm going to talk to someone in my own office, I feel obliged to get up and go see them. Just too busy to do that. So it actually ended up communicating more with the remote people than with people in her own building, just because it was, more convenient, and she didn't feel guilty about doing a video call to someone who sits 3 metres away from her.
Yeah, it's something we see a lot with customers. I mean, being from HP, we tend to advocate as Microsoft does, and it's nice to actually see it in customers. And another customer we had, they talked about just these new groupings, the way it was a software development company, and they found that people operated in a new way, and these kind of virtual teams started to spring up. They'd always been there, but it had been done in a very piecemeal way, using like things like Skype and so forth, and suddenly they had this new way to communicate, and it was just really powerful. Brilliant. So this is the alleged science bit. We're a little bit pushed for time, so we'll do it at a higher level. But if anyone's interested, Scott Maynard, who was key in the role, is sitting in the audience. We're happy to take any questions later, as I'm sure Mike will. So this one just talks briefly to the process we went through to get from OCS to Link. It's relatively standard, but we thought it was worth describing for those who haven't gone through the process. So initially we had the OCS clients and the OCS pools, and applied the updates to the client and server to ensure that we could then move to the next step of Link. Built the new Link pools, established a shared edge so that both environments could leverage it, merged the topologies, migrated the users, and then did the OCS to Link client upgrade. And at that point, OCS is redundant and it's gone. So it's pretty straightforward and well documented on the Microsoft site. But do read it in detail, because the thing that I guess it wasn't challenging, but that very first one around client and server updates, what we found, because it was such a large environment, was we had quite a few versions of the OCS client out there, didn't we?
Yeah, so what we found is we use SCCM to push all the updates out, and we actually found that there was a number, it was still in the small percentage, but still a lot of computers when you talk about our scale, who didn't have the SCCM client installed, so they were never receiving updates, which actually made it a bit tricky to push the new client down.
Yep. Equally with live meeting, we had some clients when we did the remove script that some had OCS and live meeting, some didn't, and that was it was kind of a strange challenge, because you'd assume that all the other parts would be harder, but that was probably I felt the one of the biggest challenges we had to overcome.
Yep.
So this is a high level version of the current architecture. It does keep changing, so I'll probably be picked up by Scott and Mike as we go through this.
I think this is still current.
Oh, is it good
for
stuff?
The next few weeks.
So the firewalls are in blue, and there are multiple layers, but it was easy to draw it as a simplified version. At the moment, we have 4 front ends in a pool and 2 mediations. We've not needed a separate conferencing pool, just because of the usage and also because of your telepresence around the Polycom and the RMX bridge. You can also see the integration, it's kind of obscured, but the Exchange UM servers down the bottom to voicemail. And coming off of the device in the center, you can see the connection to, in this case, Sonos products, connecting to the PSTN clouds. And then in the left-hand side of the screen, the reverse proxies and the edge servers. There's a mix of different low bouncing hardware and DNS.
Yes, yeah.
Cool. But in essence, it's a pretty standard implementation. I guess in hindsight, well, things have changed, yeah? And so the directors now, if we were doing it from scratch, I guess, Mike, we probably wouldn't have gone with directors, do you think?
I actually don't know on that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so no comment.
Perhaps we wouldn't have gone with directors, but yeah. Beyond that, I guess the only thing that's different from a standard topology might be to having a conference pool, but in the case of Fonterra, there wasn't really the use case for it at that point.
So I guess just one thing to point out on that one is that this is scaled for our current project, and our current project's only just started. So hence why we're saying it's changing. We've only just put another three servers, I think was the latest addition. And it's to take us through our current project, which is Rest of New Zealand. So it's like another 4,000 or 5,000 enterprise voice users coming on over the next 12 months. So that, yeah, this is scaled for that already.
That's a good preemptive for the next piece. Will you talk about the where
next?
We go from here?
So we're next. So we're rolling out Link to another 4 or 5. No, so so what part of this? Well, so the main thing we're looking at here is disaster recovery is definitely top of our list. Now we're running with I would say HA. People may argue how much HA we have, but it's mostly available. But what we're looking at doing as part of this project is full disaster recovery and full failover. Now, of course, as you probably already know or seen from other sessions, is on Link 2010, which we're currently on, that does take some manual work to get DR on Link. So we are seriously considering moving to 2013 purely for DR capabilities. It's still pending design and discussion, but we're working on that at the moment. So these other ones, and like call recording is actually one of these ones where it's just come out of those site discoveries. So we have one of our corporate teams that have, it's almost compliance recording requirements, but they have to record every call. And as you know, Link doesn't do that out of the box. So that's a solution we'll be looking into. And one which is the very entertaining one for us now is Link Global. So as I was saying earlier, there's a lot of demand internationally. In fact, right now we've got two international projects, well, three international projects, if you call Australia international, on at the moment, which is, so our main office in Australia, so it's about 600 people, so they've had the Link capability for a while, Link Enterprise Voice capability for a while, but they're only just now cutting over from their old PBX. We've also got a big project, which is Link for most of Asia, if not all of Asia, and a good chunk of South America, and as a single project. There's about 39 sites, I think, in that, probably about 1,000 people, and all sorts of interesting regulatory requirements to work through. And the last one is actually we're building a brand new factory, well, it's a joint venture, I believe, in the Netherlands. And so we've kind of, since it's building from scratch, we've just said, right, no traditional telephony system, we're only doing Link for that site. That's still a paddock at the moment, I think. So that one's, we've got a little bit of time on.
Shall I bring up the diagram and you can come back to those two? Because the diagram relates directly to that.
Yes. So this is our back of a cigarette packet architecture that we've done for Rest of the World. But the reality is this is what our end state's pretty much going to look like. Where our clustering of staff has changed from year to year, but not drastically. So that's what we're kind of thinking at the moment, pending some more detailed analysis. So like a pool in the Americas, a pool in Asia. We did originally have a potential pool in Europe, and we've taken that out again because, just depending on the population of staff in those regions, it may come back in. Time will tell.
We were talking at lunch actually about some of this work, and one of the things is around, from an architecture perspective, is around the patterns. And so although, as Mike said, it's really key to that deep site survey, I guess what we're looking in, because we're in the stages of designing this, is to create those patterns so we have templates per site. And I think, some mandates have been set. I mean, it says at the bottom there that we're looking to go with a SIP core and do ISD as necessary. But, I mean, do you want to mention, just because we didn't touch on it before because I moved you along, but in terms of New Zealand, our standard site template for a factory or a remote site, what's that going to be?
Yeah, so we're, at the same time as doing Link, we're collapsing our PSTN access down to a single SIP trunk out of our data centre, which, again, wasn't originally part of the project, but it just made so much sense that as we went through the design, that came about. So we've just started doing that right now, so we've probably got a few hundred users going over the SIP trunk out of the data centre. But it's been reasonably successful, and our strategy is to have the whole country hanging off a single SIP trunk with a failover to our secondary data centre. There are some exceptions to that rule. As you can imagine, we have locations that don't necessarily have the world's best WAN links into them. We've got a number of sites that max out at 2 meg, some sites that max out at less than that. And so to push all their voice traffic over the WAN isn't practical. So for some of those sites, we're still looking at options, but the fallback will be to have a local ISDN gateway on site just for those sites where we don't have WAN bandwidth.
So you've basically got two site model approach. So either they get nothing and they run off the link core,
yep.
Or where the bandwidth's too low, they will have a device, a gateway on site to still leverage the ISDN.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
And we think that model will expand globally, but countries may.
Yeah.
Make
so
it
so
more
the
difficult.
Global one, that's definitely our preference, is that single SIP trunk. But I mean, for any of you who have looked into international regulations around voice, it's not an easy answer. So
yep.
Every country is different.
I mean, in India, there are some regulations specifically by location which don't allow that, and other countries don't allow you to have a SIP in that case. What I tried to do in this diagram, what we tried to do, is to show the pools. The funny grey squares were supposed to demonstrate SIP trunks, and in one instance, there's a red line coming off that site to Sky ISDN. But, this is where we're going, I guess.
Yep. Yep.
Cool. So that's us done. So I'll hand over to Stuart. We'll come back in a minute.
Thank you, Jonathan. Mike, is all good?
Okay, thank you.
So I'm now going to take my 30-minute presentation and compress it even further, because I'm aware I'm standing between you all and this. Important that I get a move on. We'll be following a similar style to what the Fonterra guys have done. So mainly so you can get the same sort of experience that we've had. So again, some information about Lincoln. You know, we are a specialist land-based university. That means we have a diverse range of users. Our main campus is at Lincoln. It's about 20 kilometres away from Christchurch. We have a research focus. Now, what that's led to is a need for us to collaborate with other organisations. We have been impacted by the Canterbury earthquake, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. So what I'm going to do is just outline our voice landscape pre-September 2010. We had about 1,000 plus users using telephony solutions. We have a large physical campus. Oops, sorry. That better? Okay, try that. Friday the 13th. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, try again. So we have a large campus that's 50 hectares in size for those users. So that means it's actually quite spread out. It's quite geographically diverse. We don't have large concentration of users. So we have some issues where, yeah, great, we have 200 office workers and they're in one nice building and it's pretty easy to get to. But we also have three guys who work in a shed somewhere, and we've also got to try and deliver solutions for them. We were running a Nortel CS1000. Now, that meant that it went bankrupt, so we had some slight concerns there. And we have around about 900 desk phones. So our roadmap pre the earthquake looked a bit like this, which was probably similar to a lot of organizations. We were aware of OCS 2000, unified messaging. We were looking quite carefully at OCS, thinking, well, actually, what we should do is we should put that in, because that looks really good. And this whole idea of presence and instant messaging and video conferencing is actually something that would be really useful to our users. But we've got quite a large investment in our existing system, so we don't actually want to pick that up and throw it away. So we should keep it. We'll do a trial. We'll see how it goes. We'll probably then put OCS or link in place across the organization, but it will be as a collaboration piece. It won't be to replace the existing telephony solution. We then look at doing a review of our telephone system in about 2013, which is about now, so we should be starting that piece of work. Then the Canterbury earthquakes happened. They, as I said, they did impact us. The main one for us was September. The campus is actually quite physically close to that. We were only about 15 to 20K away from the center of the 7.1. We lost power for 12 hours. We had some issues getting access to buildings. So in your DR planning, I would seriously recommend that you think about access to buildings and so on and so forth. But generally, we got things back, and we got things back relatively quickly. And it was a good experience, and we carried on operational. Then the February quakes happened, which obviously had a much more significant impact on the region, in Christchurch in particular. Again, we closed for a few weeks. At that time, we were providing accommodation for other people, allowing staff time to recover and see what happened. After February, we started a process of evaluating buildings and assessing what was happening. And that process took about 6 months to complete. And in November 2011, two things happened. First off, I got the job of IT director at Lincoln University. And 2 weeks after getting that role, we decided to close a number of buildings on campus. Now, the buildings that we closed had about 600 staff and postgrads in, including IT. So challenge number one was to move the IT department and 600 people and all their associated equipment. It also contained the main server room, and that's the story of another presentation, which is about infrastructure service. I'm happy to talk to anybody who's interested in that as an offline. But also it housed the room that the telephone system was in. So we were faced with needing to do something with our existing telephony solution rapidly. So we started to look around and work out what we should be doing. Our first thoughts were to pick up the existing system and just move it. As I said, we have a large physical campus, and that means we've got quite an investment in the copper infrastructure on the ground. So we found the costs of that were high. We estimated it was between 50 and 75% of moving away, of putting in a new sort of equivalent Avaya solution. We also wanted to move away from investing in copper. Now, we'd just been through a process where we'd moved lots of people, and we just had lots of difficulty with making sure we had computer networking and phone lines provisioned for people. So we knew that was an issue. And also we knew we were about to embark on a building program and moving people around again. So we wanted to move away from copper. Also, we were keen on collaboration. You know, we really are keen on reaching out to our students, reaching out to our to other members of the research community, and also reaching out amongst the staff as well. We're, again, you know, we can see the potential of Skype, and the integration of Skype into Link is a very good story for us, along with the use of Office 365. So our students use Office 365 as their email solution. So how we integrate Link and Office 365 can give us some obvious benefits. So what we did was we were concerned about how we actually sold this to our staff. Now, in the university environment, we're not a corporate environment. We're a bit softer than that. We're more about trying to persuade to sell a solution to individuals rather than actually say, this is what you will use. So it was all about trying to get create a buzz, create good stories so it would gain acceptance. So we created the steering group at a pretty high level. And then we created really three main areas. One was the policy area there on the left of the screen. And that was really middle managers within the organization. And what they were looking at were things like how people use calendaring. You know, for Link and Presence to really work well, you've got to have your organization using your calendar well so people know that they should not be, you know, not to call me now because I'm a little bit busy at the moment. It's probably not going to answer my phone because I'm presenting at TechEd. Billing was another one. So we have an IT person who spends about a week producing who spent about a week every month producing reports to 43 different departments, and he would send those diligently out to 43 different administrators, and they would either spend 1 minute ticking the box or 1 week going through line by line, actually signing off each one. And what we found at the end of the day is it didn't actually make much of a difference to the overall cost of what we were spending as an organization. What we're concerned about is exception. So what that group came up with was, well, actually, let's not bill. Let's just have a model where we charge departments annually based on the number of users and let the IT department take the time it saves by not running these reports, actually run some high-level reports to say, well, if a user starts to abuse a phone system or has a high level of change of pattern, then we can deal with them. Then we had some selection groups going. So we had a technical group going, and that was obviously, you know, they were the people who sat there and said we need X number of edge servers and integrates into Exchange this way. And we had a user group going. And the user group was at quite a low level in the organization. It was the departmental administrators. It was the secretaries. It was the people who actually do the work, and also the people you really don't want to annoy because you'll never get stuff done if you do. And what they did was the user group and the technical group were the two groups that made the selection. So they set in on the product demonstrations. They set in on the training. They looked at it. And also with the user group, different approach to Frontera, what we did was we give the user group pretty much every single headset available on the marketplace and said, you choose and you decide the criteria about who gets what. Now, they were working to a budget, so they knew they couldn't get everybody the $400 headsets. But what it meant for me was when a user was complaining that they didn't have a headset down the same as a person down the corridor from them, we were able to turn around to say, well, actually, that's not an IT decision. That's Mary down the corridor. You know, she knows that you only make two calls a week, and you really don't need a $400 device to do so. Also, the user group setting on the training session. So they changed the first training session quite a bit. So they sat through it first and thought, well, actually, no, we need to tweak this, do that, do this. They also, a member, sat in every single training session to users and actually introduced it. So what that meant was it was the users themselves introducing the project, framing it in a context. So it was seen as an organizational project, not an IIT project. And this sort of project worked really well for us, and it got us a really good buy-in. So our roadmap post the earthquake looked a bit like this. We spent 2011, 2012 really recovering and moving stuff and sorting out our primary infrastructure. Mid-2012, we'd done a product selection, and we went with Vodafone and Agile, who were the people who did the implementation for us. And we started doing the BA work that Jonathan and Mike alluded to, where you go around, you interview people, you find out what the requirements are, you put them into use cases. We also had a new building being built on campus that was to replace some science facilities we'd lost. And we took a strategic decision not to put copper into there. So that also gave us a firm deadline to work to. So early February 2013, we rolled out to that group, and that was about 50 users. And it generally went really well. Lots of positive feedback, lots of good noise. University nature is quite cyclical, so it goes through peaks and troughs. So start of registration period, students coming on campus is extremely busy. So we took a halt for a month, and then we did a couple more pilots. And what we did with the pilots was we actually reviewed the sort of the timings that it took, and we worked out how many users we could deal with at a particular given time. And the process we settled on doing was we did 50 users every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for 4 weeks. And we just went at a rate of knots. And we got it knocked out in 4 weeks. End of 4 weeks, all our main users were across on Enterprise Voice. So we had about 800 Enterprise Voice users at that stage. Any issues that came along, if they weren't fixable quickly, we just parked them. We had a team looking at this. It was a team of four. We had a guy in the back end, sort of looking at some of the processes in the server side. We had a trainer who would go out in the morning. They would go out in the morning and assist users, as would a member of our staff. And we had somebody who floated to actually provide some additional resource. And what we made sure is that everybody got visited within about an hour of them moving over to Link to make sure that they could make a phone call, they could receive a phone call, they could set up their voicemail, and they were good to go. And then we would constantly revisit them over the week. The number of visits they would get would become less and less frequent. But also what we saw was that most people, particularly those who went to the training, which we didn't make mandatory, picked up the product really easily. And quite often, you know, on the second or third visit, it would be, yeah, I'm trying to do an audio conference with three people in at the moment, and I want to share my desktop, but I also want to bring in video with this fourth person. It's not quite working, can you assure me? And we hadn't covered any of these topics in the training. People had just found out themselves from how intuitive the product is to use. So in about June of this year, we'd finished that, and then we started on what I would call the hard stuff, which is the analog. So that's it's your lift phones, it's your fax machines, it's your BMS systems, all those really, you know, all those analog devices are out there. We, for instance, have got 46 faxes across our organization. We're going to reduce that to 6. So it's an opportunity to actually look at some of this stuff. We're also going to be doing a 2013 upgrade, so we're not umming and ahhing. We're saying, yeah, we'll do that. Call pickup groups, fantastic feature of Link 2013. The integration opportunities with Skype, again, really, really appeals to us as an organization. So we'll be doing 2013 in November, December of this year. Also, we will be rolling out Link to another site. We have a site of around 200 staff and students in Balclutha. We are just currently getting a network upgrade at the moment. It currently connects with via about 6 wireless hops. So we're not planning on running enterprise voice over that, but we will be pushing Link out to them when we get there. So a bit about our setup. So I said delivered by Vodafone and Agile. We use Vodafone SIP, and it works really well. We have two sites. One is production, and one is DR. The production site is not at Lincoln. The production site is 20 kilometers away in Christchurch, and it runs as infrastructure as a service. So we run Link completely virtual. So our hardware costs involve me phoning up our supplier and saying, give me another blade, please. That's the sort of diagram. We roll over. It works. We replicate with the DR. So we use some virtual replication technology. That gives us an RPO of about 15 minutes and an RTO of about 4 hours if we lose our main infrastructure service site. Where next? As I said, Link 2013, the integration with Office 365, so the ability, for instance, for students to see the present status to IM the teaching staff. The distance delivery is something that's really sort of keen to us to start engaging in. Can we put seminars online? Can we put lectures online, stream between lecture theatres? So we're doing some common courses with large number of people sitting in them, and we physically don't have spaces big enough to teach everybody we want to at one time. So using Link to actually get from one lecture theatre to another is something that we're going to investigate doing. Really, that's it. If you guys want to come up and get some questions. Has anybody any questions? Yeah. Sorry, can you repeat that again, please? My TCO has probably reduced by about 25%. It's a bit unknown because we've had lots of swings and roundabouts, and I'm looking at it across the cost, the call costs as well are in the mix. So when we brought in Vodafone SIP, for instance, we get free national calls. But also one of the great features of Link is the ability to for users to put in their own device and allow them to forward calls. What we're seeing at the moment is that call cost is not too great, but it's too soon for me to be able to definitely say, well, actually, it's at this level, so I'm unsure. If it tracks how I think it's going to track, it'll be about 25% less. We still have a traditional support contract with Agile on our telephone solution. We will migrate away from that, and we'll bring more and more of it in-house. We'll still probably have a maintenance contract in place for the session border controllers.
I don't actually have the numbers with me about what our reduction is. There has been, I know what the total dollars are, but I can't give you that. But let's just say it's significant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. You mentioned availability and uptime. Have you had any downtime at all with your infrastructure
and services? We had an issue with our firewalls recently, and that meant we lost our main infrastructure service site. We lost it for about 15 minutes, but that was it. Link in itself hasn't had a failure.
And one last one, have you got most people using video as well as voice?
No, we don't. We focus again on voice as a replacement. We have a little bit of video that will grow over time as more and more people want to use it. Particularly when we start getting into the collaboration stuff. When we bring the other side on board, that will actually change how people actually perceive Link and see more and more uses of it going forward. It will grow. It just does. People just plug stuff in and use it.
How have you approached Federation, particularly Open Federation?
So, well, for us, we actually talked about this earlier. So we're... We'll call it Open Federation. So we're not open in like the terms in HP are where it's just open federated, but we don't challenge anyone's request to federate. So basically, if anyone asks, they get it, but it's not globally open. We've actually found federation has been one of those really great, powerful features. And granted, it tends to be mostly IT, and us being outsourced, we tend to federate with all our suppliers. But so we don't challenge any federation. I'm actually the approver for federation anyway, and I really don't ever say no. So, we're probably fed over about 30 different companies now.
What drove the decision to not go with Open?
We're naturally risk adverse. So, and it wasn't even really a decision that was consciously made. When we first implemented the Link Edge, that's just how we implemented it. And we're not going to change it to Open just because, you know, we don't. There are some areas we probably may say no to, but you know, it's just where we are today.
And we're open, and I didn't tell the organisation they couldn't be, so that's how we did it. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
How did you do the effects lines again? The effects lines and other analog
lines? We're doing it just fine. Standard analog gateway. That's just what we're doing.
Yeah, we're actually looking at quite a number of options for that. So we're doing an analog to SIP gateway for where we can, but we're also looking at email to fax services, fax to email services, and basically we have an insane number of fax machines, most of which haven't sent a fax in the last 10 years. So we'll definitely just be killing a whole lot of them, but yeah, we're basically going in with a number of options and then just trying to find the best one for the site.
Make sure your login is turned on your fax machine so you can actually prove to people you've never sent a fax for a few years.
Yep.
We've got time for probably one more question if anyone's got any last thoughts.
Yep. Did you have any issues with alarms, blue-reliance fire alarms and monitoring alarms?
For us, that's on our to-do list. We haven't done any yet. So we know that's an issue area for us. Our baseline is to put them on POTS lines.
It's similar to us. I mean, we've done a proof of concept using an analog gateway to do some of this stuff, and things like loud ringer speakerphones and all those sort of things. They are hard to do. We are looking at analog gateways, but again, POTS lines is a fallback as well.
So just the reason I'm stopping this a little bit early is that one of the things that I'm doing with Microsoft, or HP is doing with Microsoft, which may be beneficial to some of you, is we've established a link user group, which you can get to via the email address, which you can see on the LinkedIn, or there's a LinkedIn group. And really what we want to do is provide an opportunity for you to drive discussions. I've done two sessions now with customers in Auckland and Wellington, where it was a user group driven by, Mike did one of them, and another company we work with called SunGuard did a session, and it was really useful for people to ask difficult questions. So rather than having 5 minutes at the end of this session, you had an hour, yeah? So what I'm hoping to do is user group, A, because it's funded by Microsoft and HP, we've got beers and pizzas whenever we do it. And equally, what we'd like to do is get you guys to register and then to try and drive it for us. So to kick things off, please take them down and add your names. We've got an event coming in Christchurch at the end of October and Hamilton. So I'd really recommend that to you. And I guess at that point, Paul, shall I hand back to you?
No, I think with that, I think we can... Okay. Thank you very much for coming along, and I'd like to thank the customers for coming out and speaking around there.